This is the December 19th, 2014 edition of WFAE Talks, the last edition for our inaugural year of this podcast. My name's Greg Collar, the news director at WFAE, and I'm joined by education reporter Lisa Worf. Hello, Lisa.
Hey.
Really, Lisa, a whoopee cushion?
I found this in my desk as I was reshifting my desk over, and I had to bring it out, and it was a gift from a good Secret Santa a couple of years ago. So in the holiday mischievous spirit, I thought I'd bring it in.
And Lisa actually put it down on my chair.
Yes, you walked in while I was doing it, so it wasn't effective.
No. How old are you? You don't have to answer that.
Are you saying this is immature?
Yeah, I am. Well, not whether that's a bad thing. I'm not saying that, but it is immature.
I'm okay with that.
And joining us for the first time, the one and only Duncan McFadden.
Hey, Greg, Lisa, how are y'all?
Yeah. Good.
This is I didn't realize that today was your ask you today. I thought you'd been on here before, but I was wrong.
Yeah, I guess it just kind of didn't work out until now, but I'm happy to be here.
Have you felt snubbed?
No.
Okay. Duncan is kind of our jack of all trades here. He's a reporter, and then our Weekend Edition Saturday host, and he is you often hear on Morning Edition, and also this week you've been doing All Things Considered a couple times.
A little bit of ATC as of late. Yeah, I wear a lot of different hats here, but it keeps me on my toes.
Lately, you've been one of our chief midday newscaster because we had to replace. We had an opening. Well, someone had to take over for Marshall when he was promoted to Morning Edition host. And you've filled that role for the most part for the last few months, but that's going to change. You're going to be kicked off newscast pretty soon.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting back in the field and doing some longer feature reporting. It's been kind of a while. I got to dust off the old recording kit and get back out there, but I'm looking forward to it. We talked about some things I'm going to start covering come January 5th, January 6th, and looking forward to it.
And I have to say that all of Duncan, my colleagues in the news department, are so thankful for what Duncan has been doing the last several months, because that's a tough job to do newscasts hour after hour, day after day. And I bet you're also glad to get back to reporting.
Reporting.
I'm probably going to take some lunch breaks in January, the first couple of weeks of January. That's one thing you don't get to do when you're doing newscasts. You're on the air every 55 minutes or so, and you get to run out and grab something to eat for 15 or 20 minutes, but you don't get to really experience a lunch break. So beware of that come January.
And the reason you'll have that time is we've hired someone for that position, someone local. Tequila DeRue is her name. She'll start January 5th, and then we also have another reporter named Gwendolyn Glenn, who's going to be starting January 5th.
Yeah.
Yeah, you may have heard her. She's been on NPR with some feature stories. She has been in Baltimore, I believe.
Right.
She's
coming from there. And she's originally from South Carolina area and has
Rock Hill, I think. Yeah.
Not quite that north, but she's from north of Columbia for sure.
She's a graduate of Winthrop University
in
Rock Hill. That's what I was thinking.
Yes, she is.
So has ties to the area.
And then we are going to be at full staff for a while. I mean,
hopefully a long time.
Yeah.
It is really neat, seeing the news department go from a couple reporters to, it's bustling now. And it's fun to be a part of the whole team.
But it's also kind of tough this time of year because not all the team is around. People are taking vacation
times. True.
And then there isn't as much news because other people are taking vacation time and in their professions, the newsmakers, and then we still have news hole to fill. And I know, one thing you all have been working on are we're going to be updating some stories we've covered throughout the year. And both of you have your stories done, right? That are going to air next week.
Actually, speaking of people not really calling you back, I've had a hard time on my sources, but yeah, my story's on track for next week. I might have to do some work on it over the weekend at the rate we're going, but we'll have it.
And Lisa, you're all done too, right?
I have to write it, but the
you have to write it.
Just write it.
Yeah. I have to do the story, but
the reporting is done.
Well, you're further ahead than I am. So,
well, on to the other the primary issues we're discussing this episode. One will be the firing of a city employee over what she wrote on Facebook. Lisa covered that story this week, and North Carolina pulls out the red carpet for an outsourcing company. That's something that Ben Bradford had covered this week, but he did file a story on that this week. But He's out today doing something else, so he couldn't join us, and we're glad Duncan could be here instead. Lisa, let's start with the story that you covered. You did a really nice examination of public employee free speech rights over what a fire investigator with the Charlotte Fire Department had written.
Yeah, so I mean, this case, I first heard about it through Observer. Story right around Thanksgiving time. So it's been playing out, and you know, there's a lot that's involved in this. You know, the city says they fired her over this Facebook post, which was do you have it in front
Yes,
of
I
you?
Did. Let me read it. And this is her name is Crystal Eschert. I'll read from your story. She referenced reports of another police shooting near Ferguson, Missouri, that said a white person was the victim. And this is what she wrote on her personal Facebook page.
And she is white.
Yes, she is white. Where is Obama? Where is Holder? Where is Al Sharpton? Where are Trayvon Martin's parents? Where are all the white guy supporters? So why is everyone making it a racial issue? So tired of hearing it's a racial thing. You are a thug and worthless to society. It's not race. You're just a waste, no matter what religion, race, or sex you are.
So for that Facebook post, the city said that was grounds for firing. And, you know, this is a complicated case because she had also alerted a city councilwoman about conditions in a city building that she thought were unsafe. And there may have been a couple other incidents she, you know, relayed back to city council members. And so she's saying, and her attorney says, you know, this is a retaliatory firing. But, you know, that aside, we thought it was really worth an examination of the First Amendment issues here. And, you know, of course, the First Amendment does not, you know, in regards to me being able to say something, you know, personally off the job and not being fired for it. You know, when you work for a private company in many states who don't have their own laws about this, the First Amendment doesn't protect you because it's for the government. So, you know, public employees have First Amendment protections then. So this story went into that and kind of looked at some of the arguments involved in here. And it's not absolute. You know, it's certainly a balancing act about what you can and
sure.
Can't get fired for saying something outside of work.
And one of the big things is if you do this, whether or not you do it on the job or if you're a city employee and you're out there work in a city uniform and taking some stance, that's different than a city employee doing something on their own time and
not identifying themselves as a city employee.
Right, and representing themselves as being part of the city. So this was apparently on her personal page, and the city's stance doesn't matter. This Ron Carley said this is evidence of
discriminatory and inflammatory.
Right. You talk to law school professors who they all pretty much were thinking she's got a good case if she decides to sue.
Yeah, she does. That's what they all said. That it looks like she has a pretty good case. I mean, as far as it being a balancing act, you know, I talked to one law professor out of UCLA, Eugene Volokh, who pointed out that, you know, for example, there have been cases where police officers have been, or cities have been, courts have found cities justified for firing police officers who have made outright racist statements. But he says, you know, in this case, for example, it's not so clear how that kicks in because, you know, one, you could say, you know, how does this apply to what people could perceive as racially insensitive mm-hmm. questions? And then, you know, she's not a police officer with powers to arrest. She is a fire investigator. So there's another lawyer out of Chapel Hill who said, you know, the courts will have to prove that this impedes, you know, what she said impedes her performing on the job, impedes her doing her job. And he said it's tough to see how that would happen.
That expert you talked to said something like, if I were given the choice between the city's hand and this employee's hand, I would take the employee's hand.
Yeah,
in that
exactly.
Case.
That was another professor who said that. So he also pointed out that, you know, when you have situations like Ferguson, Trayvon Martin, you know, that's really put race, you know, front and center in the national debate, that, you know, people are going to be talking about these issues. And then you have social media, which suddenly makes private speech very public. You know, courts and employers and employees are going to have to figure out the balance on this.
And the legal language when it comes to this is is government employees are protected if they are speaking out on an issue of, quote, public concern.
Yes.
And certainly racial issues and police tensions with police, and the law professors you talk to all agree this is an issue of public concern.
Yes. Yes. Hands down.
What's happening here? She appealed her firing, but she's lost all her appeals, so her internal appeal. So now she's just got to decide if she's going to challenge this in court.
Yeah, or they chose not to, do another hearing. So at this point, the city has...
This is the first time they've ever fired someone for this, over a Facebook
post.
That's
the city says. It's the first time they've fired someone over a social media posting. And at this point, you know, several city council members are concerned about the situation. So the city manager has called in an outside investigator to look at the situation, looking specifically at the claims of accusations of retaliation, that she was fired because she went to city council with these concerns. So there's an attorney who's, you know, starting an investigation into that. And then there's going to be a separate investigation into the fire department, how they work. There have been some allegations that it's kind of heavy-handed. Mm-hmm. They're going to be looking into that too. So we'll see what comes out of that. And, you know, in the meantime, Eschert hasn't sued yet, but, you know, it sounds like she's probably thinking about it. We did not talk to, she wouldn't talk to us. Her attorney did talk to us.
Has the city gone through what people have posted on on social media? I would assume there's been a lot of political comments made, not on behalf of the city, but just have posted on social media.
Well, and I'm sure that, you know, if this goes further, this case goes further, there's probably going to be a look at what other employees are posting, you know, to see, you know, is this worse than what other employees have been saying, and why haven't you gotten after them? But it's hard for me to tell how much the city really monitors this. I mean, they say that, you know, this came to their attention because someone emailed the comments to the city fire chief and the police chief. So I don't get the sense that they heavily monitor this, but you know.
All right. Well, we'll see.
Yeah, and if you didn't get a chance to hear Lisa's story, it's fantastic. And
she's
not going to mention this, but the Washington Post actually picked up on a segment of her story for one of its blog posts. And great job, Lisa.
It always helps to call the law professor who writes the blog for comment.
there's the rest of the story.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I was wondering if you were going to mention that just now when he said that, but still, it was a renowned law professor, well-respected law professor.
Yeah,
and
he thought it was an intriguing case. So
doesn't take away from the fact that the story is very good.
Exactly.
Well, I had some good guidance and direction on this from a certain news director. So
I appreciate that. All right, the other story we're going to talk about is one that was produced by Ben Bradford. He looked at the company Cognizant, which is an outsourcing company. And they already have operations in North Carolina, but not too long ago there was a press release from Governor Pat McCrory that really praised the decision by Cognizant to add 500 jobs across the state. You know, pretty typical fare for a press release. You know, Cognizant is a strong part of our IT industry here in North Carolina. Our state continues to be the destination of choice for technology jobs across the country, and having Cognizant expanding its presence here reinforces that. That was a comment from the governor in the press release. And here is what State Senator Malcolm Graham of Mecklenburg County had said in that press release, too. Technology companies like Cognizant know Charlotte is a great place to attract new business. We are pleased Cognizant chose to stay and grow in our region. And then here is what Senator Graham said in Ben Bradford's story.
Well, I was stunned. Part of supporting incentives and grants for corporations is for them to hire locally.
And he's stunned because whether or not they will hire locally or how much they will hire locally, Cognizant, for these jobs is a big question. Cognizant would not talk to us for this story. But for one, it's one of the largest users of H-1B visas, which is basically hiring people from overseas and bringing and putting them in jobs here. The other major issue here is we're giving tax credits to a company that's in the business of outsourcing jobs overseas. So whether or not that is appropriate is a subject of debate. And Ben Story had some comments from people who questioned whether it's appropriate to use tax credits for such a company.
Yeah, the state, I think, has offered Cognizant up to $5 million from its Economic Development Fund and tax credits. And it's perfectly acceptable under the terms of the agreement, as Ben reported, for them to bring in, if they wanted, all of those 500 workers from overseas. I think he said what the company does is essentially they bring in skilled workers from overseas on these H-1B visas, the guest worker program, mm-hmm. and they train them in the U.S. So that they can then go back overseas and set up operations for overseas workers.
Here is how one professor from Howard University named Ron Heyer. He's a loud critic of how the U.S. regulates offshoring companies, and here's what he told Ben Bradford.
Their basic business model is to take away, destroy American jobs. So it's a bit surprising, and if I was a North Carolina taxpayer, I'd be really baffled and shocked that we'd be taking our tax dollars and subsidizing a firm that's actually going to be a net negative to the economy.
And I think that we should point out, Ben reported that only about 12% of the H-1B workers that Cognizant brings into this country, only about 12% does it actually sponsor for permanent U.S. residency. So that's one of the things that's gotten critics of this company a little upset about the North Carolina deal and about Cognizant in general.
It's certainly something we will be following into the new year. And Duncan, thanks for joining us this week.
Great to be here, Greg. Thanks for having me.
All right. Lisa, Happy New Year.
Thank you. You too.
You too, Duncan.
Oh, thanks.
All right.